This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Let me start out by wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas. I hope you're able to spend some time this weekend with those you love, and I hope you also have the chance to go to church and spend some time reflecting on the amazing gift of God's own Son, being born of a virgin and living a sinless life, that you might have the opportunity to spend eternity with Him. But even with Christmas being upon us, there was no shortage of controversial topics in the world of politics this week. A little later on, we'll hear from Corey Lewandowski about private emails that are being leaked to the press. Also, Penny Warner, a mom of a high school junior in Louisiana, is fighting back against the ACLU. But first, during last Tuesday's cabinet meeting, President Trump called upon the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Ben Carson, to lead their meeting in prayer. Predictably, and maybe the bigger story is, MSNBC's reaction. David Barton, who is the president of Wall Builders, joined Tony to talk about it. But first, here's Tony Perkins to introduce the topic.
During a cabinet meeting, President Trump called upon Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Ben Carson to lead members of the Trump cabinet in prayer. This is not the first time that they've had prayer. In fact, their very first one, the president called upon the vice president to pray. But the greater story here is not that there was prayer in the White House, but MSNBC's response to it. Listen to their discussion about this earlier today.
The unusual nature of the prayer held by Ben Carson, of course, the HHS secretary, that I don't think I've ever seen in the cabinet room, something other than a White House prayer breakfast. And also the vice president, of course, praising the president for his service and for his many accomplishments from their perspective. Kristen?
The primary focus was on this tax bill, but that moment where you had Ben Carson effectively lead in prayer, he tried to make a joke about it, the president saying maybe the press could benefit from that the most. But it was striking to see everyone bow their heads in prayer in that context.
And we also, I think we have a cop, we actually have the audio of the prayer. Let's play the prayer that Ben Carson offered.
So with that, I'm going to ask Ben Carson, and you can stay if you want it, because you need the prayer more than I do, I think. You may be the only ones. Maybe a good, solid prayer, and they'll be honest, Ben. Is that possible? So Ben, we'll ask you to say grace. Thank you.
Our kind Father in heaven, we're so thankful for the opportunities and the freedom that you've granted us in this country. We thank you for the president and for cabinet members who are courageous, who are willing to face the winds of controversy in order to provide a better future for those who come behind us. We're thankful for the unity in Congress that has presented an opportunity for our economy to expand so that we can fight the corrosive debt that has been destroying our future. And we hope that that unity will spread even beyond party lines so that people recognize that we have a nation that is worth saving and recognize that nations divided against themselves cannot stand. In this time of discord, distrust, and dishonesty, we ask that you would give us a spirit of gratitude, compassion, and common sense, and give us the wisdom to be able to guide this great nation in the future. We ask in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Thank you.
Striking and unusual is what MSNBC calls it. That clip earlier, the exchange between Andrea Mitchell and Christian Walker at MSNBC. Joining us now, David Barton, Christian historian. David, is that striking and unusual for a president to have prayer in his cabinet?
Well, you know, even before striking and unusual, I don't know if we should say this, Tony. I don't know if we should let MSNBC and their 16 viewers know that there's also weekly Bible studies for the cabinet on maturity in Christ. And I don't know if we should actually tell them that more than half the cabinet members are open evangelical Christians. I don't know. If NBC got hold of that, it might really be a scandal for them. Yeah, it is amazing that something as simple as a prayer would be something striking and unusual to them. Just on the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue, as you know, we don't do anything in the House or Senate without having someone who is paid to pray open things up with prayer. So why they would think that is an unusual thing in a cabinet meeting, that's just pretty much indicative of their lack of knowledge, not anything else.
Well, and David, we go back to the beginning of this country, and we had presidents who prayed, called upon people to pray, called the nation to pray. I mean, I guess if your framework in terms of analyzing and judging what this president does is based on the last 8 years, yeah, I guess it's striking and unusual that this president is calling on people to pray, P-R-A-Y, when the previous president made a habit of P-R-E-Y on people. I guess it is striking.
Yeah, it is. And it's also easy to understand MSNBC. I mean, probably nowhere on their set do they have prayer in any kind of a way that they have seen or witnessed, and they probably haven't been to buildings on the weekends that we call churches where there would be prayer. I mean, they're just kind of unfamiliar with it. But as you mentioned, it was not that way at the beginning. And as a matter of fact, not only did we have prayer in meetings like this, but by the time you get to 1815, there had been 1,400 government-issued calls to prayer for the nation. So that's not just praying in the cabinet meetings. That's calling the whole nation to prayer, the whole state to prayer, whatever. 1,400 times by 1815. So I don't think that they thought having people pray was an unusual thing back then.
Yeah, I mean, this is the president calling upon the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development to pray, and the media just goes ballistic. I mean, I think this is further evidence of what the media denies. The president made a centerpiece of his campaign when he said, we're going to be free to say Merry Christmas again. As I have said repeatedly, that's not just about a greeting during the month of December. He was talking about the greater war on the expression of faith. And I think you see this here. This is further evidence of that.
Well, it is further evidence, and we're seeing a lot of that kind of evidence. I mean, you hearken back to the hurricanes, Harvey, et cetera, and the president calls the nation to prayer during times of hurricanes. And as we came up on 9/11, he called for 3 days of prayer. He called the nation to 3 days of prayer around 9/11. And then as you move forward even into with the light in the Christmas tree this year, his little five-and-a-half, nearly six-minute message on the light in the Christmas tree could have come from the Pope. It's the same kind of message we got from Harry Truman and got from Ronald Reagan at Christmas time. It was unequivocal. It was not squishy. It was very Jesus-centered. I was just on a White House call recently, and they started out and said, "Hey, welcome back to Christmas. Merry Christmas, everybody." And it was just, you know, it was deliberate. And so it's the kind of thing where that there is so much going around this, and you're right. It's not Christmas per se. It is everything that goes around that. What he's done, even with the executive orders to help alleviate the burden that are placed on people of faith, the conscience issues, whether it's the Justice Department weighing in on the Jack Phillips case with Baker. I mean, we're just seeing all sorts of things from this administration that are stronger than we've seen. And I'll just, you know, quite frankly, they're stronger than what we saw under President Bush. And he did some good things for the nation with faith-based office, et cetera. But he was not nearly as strong as what Trump has been in his first year.
And this is, David Barton, this is not just something that Republicans do. I mean, you go back and you remember Franklin Roosevelt leading the nation in prayer.
Yeah, Franklin Roosevelt not only led the nation in prayer, but every year on his inauguration, he had a special prayer and dedication service. I think it was back at New York Street Presbyterian Church, every year on his anniversary, and he invited people to come for a rededication every year, taking the oath again, remembering that it was God. He led the nation in 6.5 minutes of public prayer on the D-Day invasion. As it was occurring, he led in prayer. His Christmas card that year in 1944 was the text of his D-Day prayer that he issued on that day. And then as you get into Truman, I mean, you take Harry Truman, a liberal progressive Democrat. After we finished World War II, and as we were looking at Korea, he makes a tour of the world, And he says, you know what, if we can get world leaders to agree to live by the Ten Commandments and by the Sermon on the Mount, we'll never have another world war. And so he went around the world visiting leaders to get them to pledge to live by those two standards. And he came back home very disappointed because he couldn't get national leaders or international leaders to do that. He said, well, I shouldn't have been surprised. We can't even get a lot of church people to do that. But nonetheless, there's a liberal Democrat president going around the world trying to get international leaders to sign on to the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount. So, I mean, this is certainly what Trump is doing is probably not nearly as strong as what Democrats used to do. Mm-hmm. It's so much stronger than anything we've seen in the last 20 years.
Well, and David Barton, is part of the reason the left is so concerned about this and quick to jump on it is because when a president does something like this, it's what we would call using the bully pulpit, if you will, leading by example, and it has an effect upon the broader culture.
Well, not only is it leading by example, but look what we're doing. I mean, we're talking about it right now for however many hundreds of thousands of million of people listening to us. And because of social media, this is the kind of stuff that goes out everywhere. And you probably saw they were really upset even, I think it was, what, yesterday or the day before when he opened another meeting with prayer. And they thought that was completely inappropriate. And so now this is kind of like making it mainstream again. And this really bothers them because they're no longer the sole outlet of what people get in the way of information. And so because of what happened today, and as you played the clips there and as even we're discussing it, it allows us to bring back in other things that they would just assume people did not know. So this really is, I think, a good thing. And I think most of the people in the country will stand right behind the press on this and not think it's unusual or not think that it's striking. They just think that this is part of the way things have been and should be.
Who knows? And maybe the president might start tweeting out morning prayers. You know,
yeah, that would be great.
That'll send the media crazy. David Barton, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk with you, my friend.
Thank you, Merry Christmas.
Bless
you, bro. Bye-bye.
If you want to find out more about David Barton or Wall Builders, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues of the day. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at one mom's fight against the ACLU.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. In Louisiana, a mother has sued the Webster Parish School District with the help of the ACLU, alleging unconstitutional and pervasive promotion of Christianity in schools. But according to one parent, the lawsuit doesn't reflect how a majority of parents and students feel. Joining Tony to talk about it is Penny Warner, the mother of another student at Doyleen High School in Webster Parish.
Penny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for joining us. This lawsuit, which is I've read through parts of it, pretty interesting. This is a mother who's filing suit on behalf of her junior, her student who's a junior at the high school there, alleging 30 specific incidents going all the way back to I believe first grade or kindergarten.
Right.
I don't know if they keep a journal of religious offenses over the last several years.
I wouldn't think so.
I mean, is this, what are the other parents saying about this?
What I understand, judging from my community, and it is a small community, but we are pretty tightly woven, we are getting really tired of having to dumb ourselves down and hold back our Christian faith because one or two people get offended. And, you know, our freedom of religion matters also. And, you know, being a Christian is not something you should be ashamed of. Mm-hmm. We have a moral code. We have basic life skills that promote Christianity, and you can see it in how we live our lives. I think that a lot of the people in the community see what's happening and they're appalled. They know that this child is probably either seeking attention or probably coerced into filing this lawsuit by the ACLU.
Right.
I do not see this as a majority opinion. The Webster Parish School Board and its employees are well versed on what is appropriate as far as freedom of religion.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole lawsuit seems very frivolous.
Well, it's interesting. In the article that I read, it refers to this young lady. She was raised a Baptist, but now agnostic in terms of her faith. But one of the claims is in regards to the school allowing for an opportunity of prayer or meditation at the beginning of the school day, if a student chooses to do so. I actually happen to know a little bit about that. I'm the author of the statute in Louisiana regarding prayer in schools. It's been tested in court and is withstood challenge. And so as long as the school officials are abiding by the law, they are fine. And this is another example of this, you know, ACLU, Freedom From Religion Foundation, coming in to bully the smaller school districts into what you just said, dropping what we believe, what we want as parents and as a community. And Penny, I have to commend you as a parent for standing up publicly and pushing back, because so often what happens, people go silent and these bullies prevail.
Right. The silent majority. I am very opinionated, of course, and I don't mind speaking my opinion, especially when it's to defend my own faith and defend my own child. There are other children up at the school whose parents may not speak out. So someone has to speak for them as well. And I don't mind being pushed to the forefront. I don't mind that. It takes a leader sometimes to take a stand. And I think we all as parents need to take that stand. And I wish that anyone within the sound of my voice, that they hear this and they also stand up for their child and stand up for Christianity.
Well, thank you, Penny. And I will tell you what else happens as a result of that. The school officials, and many of them have good intentions, and I, so far everything I've seen there looks good. Doesn't look like they're waving a white flag or capitulating. But
right.
It helps when parents are saying, hey, we got your back. We believe in what you're doing. We support you. Because, again, when there's silence, that's often interpreted as meaning we don't care. But when you speak
right.
out, they realize it, and they're bolstered in their stand.
Right, and they think silence is consent, and it's not. Sometimes silence is we think you're crazy, and we don't think that what you're doing is right, but we may not say it. So some of my friends have started making T-shirts to further their standing with Lakeside High School and Webster Parish School Board, and I think that's the kind of voice we need. I think people need to stand up for themselves.
I could not agree more, Penny. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to keep an eye on this story, and we may get back in touch with you. Email me if there's developments in this case so we can follow back up on it, tony@tonyperkins.com. All right?
Certainly will. Thank you.
Merry Christmas, Penny.
Merry Christmas to you.
You can learn more about the fight going on in Webster Parish when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available. During this season of giving, won't you consider FRC in your financial plan? You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski right after this break.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Tens of thousands of private, unredacted emails from President Donald Trump's transition team are in the hands of Special Counsel Robert Mueller, and the president's defenders are calling foul. Joining Tony on Wednesday was Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager for Donald Trump and co-author, along with David Bossie, of the new book, Let Trump Be Trump. Here's Tony Perkins.
Corey, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, Corey, the GSA, which oversaw or provided facilities and the server for the transition team, that's a part of the what's in place for every transition that comes in. It appears that no notice was given to the transition officials, that they just turned over, based on a letter requesting it from Mueller, all of these documents.
Well, it's very strange to me because, Tony, as you know, this administration has been clear. They have nothing to hide. There is no collusion. There is no cooperation. There's been no coordination. And so I think if Mueller would have done the proper thing and asked for it through the proper channels, they would have gotten it without all of the backlash.
So why is it appear that he's just kind of going around the campaign officials, not talking to them, going to the GSA officials and getting this information?
Well, that's a great question. And I don't know why, because from everything we have seen, you know, this has been a team, the Mueller team, which is trying to work cooperatively in getting the information that they want to put a resolution. And, you know, John Dowd and Ty Cobb have talked about the relationship that they have had and the belief that the president is going to be exonerated very soon. And because of that, I'm very surprised that they have done this through the transition team and didn't follow the proper procedure.
Now, it also suggests that these records that were obtained by the special counsel's office from the GSA have been leaked to the press by unknown persons.
Well, that's a real problem. And I'll tell you, Tony, what we have seen is when it is something that is potentially detrimental, like the leaking of emails, they make it to the press right away. But when we have an FBI agent who has to be removed from the Mueller team because of an illicit affair he was having with an attorney, the same agent who questioned Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills and made a recommendation to change the wording on Hillary Clinton, we don't find out for 6 months after that person's been removed from the team. So the leaks are very systematic, and they're clearly coming from inside somewhere to hurt the president.
But, Corey, you know, if you selectively leak pieces of information that are just pieces of an overall picture or even conversation, it can be misleading.
Well, it's always misleading. And what I don't understand is how, you know, we saw this leading into the weekend where Paul Manafort was indicted. We saw that the grand jury, the media was reporting right. A grand jury indictment was going to be coming out the next day. I don't know how they knew that, because those things are supposed to be secretive. You know, we've seen time and again where information is being leaked. And look, this happened to Don Jr. just the other day. He was in a committee hearing. He was in a private session. He was giving his testimony. And there were members of Congress stepping out from those and reporting to the media what was transpiring during those hearings. I don't understand why there's no accountability in that.
Now, have you also been called in before the special counsel's office and been required to testify and speak to them?
Well, here's what I've said. I would love the opportunity to tell you my side of the story, to tell the truth. But the difference is nobody cares what I have to say, because when I left the campaign on June 20th, this was before any of this fake Russia collusion story took place. And so I wasn't there during that part of the campaign. And so nobody cares what I have to say, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, I remember. Actually, we were in the green room at Fox the day you left the campaign. We had a chance to visit there, Fox Business, up in New York. I would think this is very troubling when you see this type of information being leaked. It would suggest that this is far from a nonpartisan, independent probe for the truth. It looks like it is a partisan initiative to try, as you said, to take down the president.
Well, Tony, what we've seen is some of the individuals who've been part of this team have a clear bias. And, you know, I understand everyone has a political bias, but they have a clear bias.
Right.
And what I think we need is we need the Mueller investigation to set a definitive date when they are going to report back to the American people if they have or have not found anything to do with the president. Because they're $7 million into this investigation. They're 18 months into it. They have every person, including the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Dianne Feinstein, has said she has seen no evidence of the president or the president's team of doing anything wrong. So I think in the fairness of good government, there has to be a date by which the Mueller investigators come back and report back to Rod Rosenstein or the congressional committees that their investigation is now finished and they're closing it, or that they have found so much evidence which does not exist, they're moving forward. But it can't just go on forever.
We're up against a break, out of time, but quickly, should Mueller be removed from his post given what we've seen so far?
I don't think so, because I think it will create a constitutional crisis that members, whether they are right or wrong, would move to impeach the president on this. And he has nothing to hide. So let Mueller finish his investigation. But it has to have an end date, and that date should be very soon.
All right. Corey Lewandowski, thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy the book tour. Great book. I'm glad it's doing well.
Thank you so much.
If you want to find out more about what we do here at Family Research Council, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Merry Christmas, everyone.